Okay, good morning. Today's daf is daf Samach Zayin. We were still on Samach Vav and Beis. The Mishnah spoke about a huge amount of grain gets harvested, a large amount of barley, and out of that barley, a smaller amount becomes solas, becomes the fine flour that gets into the Karban Minchas HaOmer. So what happens with all the other grain and flour? What's done with that? So the Mishnah says that that gets redeemed and it gets eaten by anyone, by non-Kohanim, by Yisraelim. So what about Shumos and Masros? Normally when you have grain that grew in the land of Israel, 2% has to go to the Kohen as Truma, 10% needs to go to the Levi as Maaser Rishon, another 10% needs to be taken up to Yerushalayim and eaten as Maaser Sheni. And if Trumot and Maasrot are not separated, then the grain is prohibited as Tevel. So what about here? Are there obligations of Trumos and Maasros? So the Mishnah says that Rabbi Akiva said that there is an obligation. The Chachamim say it's obligated in Challah, but exempt from Maaser. Now the reason why the leftover grain would be obligated in Challah is because the moment that creates the obligation of Challah is Challah, it's when it becomes a dough. When flour mixes with water and becomes a dough, it's called Gilgul Issa, the rolling of the dough. That's sort of the beginning. That's, the Torah says, Reshis Arisos Sechem, the first of your dough, challah tarimu truma. You take out a piece and you give it to the Kohen. So when it's becoming a dough, it's way after when it was holy, because you got the flour from the Beit HaMikdash, you removed the sanctity, then a week later you make it into dough. So challah, it's obligated, but the Chachamim say, maaser would be exempt, because the moment that when the obligation of maaser starts is, as Roger told us, the miruach, when the pile of the grain is smoothed out. When the pile of the grain was smoothed out, this grain belonged to Hektesh. It was the temple trust that was smoothing out the grain. And the Torah talks about degancha, your grain, not when it is Hektesh's grain, the grain that belongs to God, or the grain that belongs to a non-Jew. So therefore, since at the moment of the smoothing, it was Hektesh grain, even though now you bought it from the Hektesh, you removed the sanctity, it still was exempt from Maaser, and it stays exempt from Maaser. So the view of the Chacham is there would be an obligation of Challah on such products, but there wouldn't be an obligation of Maaser. And Rabbi Akiva said it would be obligated both in Challah and in Maaser. So the Gemara said, what's the reasoning of Rabbi Akiva? Is it that he holds that the smoothing out of Hektesh does not create exemption? So Gemara says, no, that's not his reasoning. His reasoning is that from the very beginning, what was first consecrated as Hektesh was that which was going to be used in the Karban Omer. The leftover was never holy to start. So therefore, the leftovers were never miruach, they nimrach, they were never smoothed by Hektesh because they never really belonged to Hektesh. Therefore, they are obligated.
Rabbi, how did they remove the sanctity?
They put money.
They
took
there
money.
And they buy that.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes.
It's the only way, right?
That's right.
Okay. Rabbi Akiva was a progressive liberal. We want double tax.
Yeah. You know. Oh, because he had more going to the Kohen, maybe. So let's start again with Rava. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, but 15 lines from the bottom here. Amar Rav on Samach Vav and Beis. Rav said like this: Pshitali, it's obvious to me. Demiruach Hektesh Poter. If grain belongs to the temple trust, it belongs to Hektesh, and while it was the property of Hektesh, there was miruach. It was smeared. The pile was. Oh, thank you so much. The pile was smeared. Poter. There would be no obligation ever on that grain of Trumos and Maestros. Vafilu Rabbi Akiva, even Rabbi Akiva, who obligates the leftover grain. of the Minchas Omer in Shumas and Maestros, Lo Kamachayev Hasam, he doesn't obligate there, Ella Shalom Nitnu Mos El Tzorach Lehem. The only reason why he obligates is because the original money to first consecrate the grain was only for what was needed. It wasn't for what wasn't needed. But what was not needed was never made holy in the first place. Avo Miruach Hekdesh, but if something is in fact, the pile is smeared, the pile is smoothed when it belongs to Hekdesh, that Ba'alma, everywhere else, Poter, that would exempt from Shumos and Maisos. Okay, so that's about Hekdesh. What about if the grain belongs to a non-Jew, and the non-Jew smooths out the pile? Miruach Obed Kochav, if a non-Jew smooths out the pile, so that's Tanaihi. That's a dispute amongst the Tanaim, whether that creates a lasting exemption or not.
It's owned by a Jew or not?
No, it's owned by a non-Jew, and the non-Jew smoothed it out.
But he has no business to be in Beit HaMikdash to begin with.
No, non-Jews living in the land of Israel. Ger Toshav, a non-Jew is living there. It grew, right? It grew in the land of Israel in a field of a non-Jew. So that's one chiddush, that there would be an obligation. But the non-Jew is the one who smoothed out the pile. So that's the machlokas tanoim. The Tanya, Tormin Mishel Yisrael, I'll show Yisrael. In a braisa, you can give truma from Jewish grain on behalf of other Jewish grain. Umishal ovde kochavim, al shal ovde kochavim. You can give truma from non-Jewish grain on behalf of other non-Jewish grain. Umishal kutiim, al shal kutiim. And you can give truma from grain of kutiim. Kutiim are the kutis. These were the Samaritans. For the truma of other kutiim. Umishal kol, al shal kol. Really, you can give truma, let's say, from non-Jewish grain on behalf of Jewish grain. So what do you see? The fact that it belonged to the non-Jew, and the non-Jew did the smoothing of the pile, does not create an exemption. Because if it would create an exemption, ein tormin min apater alachiyuv, you can't give truma from what's exempt and what's obligated. You see that the smoothing of the non-Jew doesn't exempt anything. That's divrei Rabbi Meir. That's divrei Rabbi Meir. But Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon Omrim, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon say, Tarim Mishel Yisrael, Al Shel Yisrael. You can take Chuma out of Jewish grain on behalf of other Jewish grain. Mishel Ovde Kochavim, Al Shel Kutim. You can use the grain of non-Jews to take Chuma from it on behalf of grain of Samaritans, Michel Kutiim, you can use the grain of Samaritans, Al Shalov de Kochavim, on behalf of the grain of non-Jews. Avolo, Michel Yisrael, Al Shalov de Kochavim, but you can't use Jewish grain for the non-Jewish grain, because apparently, according to the view of Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon, the non-Jewish grain is exempt because it was smooth, the pile was smoothed out by the non-Jewish owner. And we have a rule, Ein Tormin Min Achiyuv Al HaPatra. You can't give Chuma from what was obligated for that which is not obligated, nor can you use that which is not obligated Min HaPatra Al Achiyuv. And therefore, V'lo Mishal Ovde Kochav Mishal Kutim. You can't use the grain of Gentiles or Kutim Al Shel Yisrael on behalf of a Jew. So you see that this question, whether the Miruach, the smoothing out done by a non-Jew owner, on his grain is going to create a lasting exemption. That's an argument. According to Rabbi Meir, it does not create a lasting exemption. According to Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, it does create a lasting exemption. Okay, this is all Rava speaking. Now another law from Rava. Gilgul Hektish. When flour is mixed with water and it becomes a dough as Hektish, Poter. That makes it always exempt. That makes this dough always exempt from challah. Because the moment that obligates challah is when the dough is created. The moment that obligates truma and maaser is when the pile of grain is finished. So the same way we said it, the miruach of hekdesh, the smoothing out of the pile of grain, creates an obligation, creates an exemption of trumas and maasros. So now, correspondingly in dough, if at the moment of the dough creation, the dough belonged to Hekdesh, and it's Hekdesh making the dough, it'll be exempt from the mitzvah of taking a piece off and giving it to the Kohen as challah. So Gilgul Hekdesh, the mixing of the flour and the water done by Hekdesh into a dough, poter exempts from the obligation of challah, if even though the dough was later redeemed from Hekdesh. That's not as you learned in a Mishnah. Hikdisha Isasa, a woman who made her dough Hekdesh, Adshalo Gilgula, if she made it Hekdesh before she had mixed the flour and water and made a dough. And then she mixes the flour and water and makes it a dough when it's Hekdesh. And after she had made a dough of Hekdesh, Ufta Asa, she then redeems it with money. So then, I'm sorry, if she redeemed it, she made it Hekdesh before she made a dough, and she redeemed it before she made a dough. So she made flour kadosh, then she redeemed the flour, then she made the flour and water into a dough. So then chayaves, and it's obligated in challah. But if she made the flour kadosh, and she only redeemed it, misha gilgala, she only redeemed it after she had made a dough, then uptasa, then she redeems it, then... I'm sorry, Hikdisha, right? If she made it holy, Ad Shelo Gilgal, before she made a dough, the Gilgal Gizbar and the executive in charge of Hekdesh was the one who made it into dough. Then V'achar Kach P'tasa, then she redeems it, then she's Ptura, she is exempt. So again, the Mishnah says three cases. If she made her flour holy and she redeemed it before she made it into a dough, then it wouldn't be obligated in challah. If she made dough when it was chulin, then she makes the dough holy, then she redeems it, it's still obligated in challah. So it was obligated in challah the moment she made it into a dough. Then no. She made that which is obligated in challah holy, and she redeemed it. Okay, so now it's again obligated in challah. If though, what she made holy, hikishat shelo gilgala, she made it holy before she made a dough, then the Gilgal Gizbar, then Hekdesh made it into a dough. The Achakach Ptasav, she then redeems it. Ptura, she's now exempt. Shebeshas Chovasa Haisa Ptura. Because at the moment of the obligation, she was exempt. At the moment of the obligation, she was exempt. When it became obligated, when it became dough, it was Hekdesh.
It's not an obligation just on a woman. Anybody.
Correct. On dough. If any person makes an isaron of flour into dough in a single bowl, so then he's obligated to take off a piece and give it to the Kohen as challah. Yeah, you would have to make take challah.
Cooked or uncooked, Rabbi?
The dough, you should give it as dough. If you didn't and you already baked it, then you have to put all the loaves together in a basket. You take one of the pieces of the baked loaf once it's in the big basket. So now again, so Gilgal Hekdesh exempts. Bai Rava now asks, Gilgal Ovid Kochavim Mai, what's the law if a non-Jew owns flour and water, and the non-Jew mixed the flour and water and made it into a dough? Does that create a lasting exemption? So Rav explains, Mishnatznan, we have a Mishnah in Masechet Challah. Mishnah says, Gershon is Gayer, if a convert has converted, V'haisalo Isa, and he has dough. So if Nases Achelon is Gayer, if the dough had become a dough before he had converted, in other words, it became a dough when he was a non-Jew, Potter, so even though now he's a Jew, he's exempt from separating challah, because the moment that creates the obligation is when it's becoming the dough, and then he was a non-Jew. However, Mishin is Gayer, if it became a dough, After he had converted, so it became a dough, and it was his, and he was a Jew. Then chayiv, so now he's obligated to separate challah. And if Safik, if he's not sure when it became a dough, so Chayiv, so it's a Safik dough Raisa, so he has to separate Chal. So Haman Katanila. So this is the question. Who is the author of this Mishnah? Do we say Dibri HaKolhi? Do we say it's everyone? And even Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, who say that if a non-Jew smooths out a pile of grain, it's still obligated in Trumas and Maestros. They obligate with the non-Jew smoothing, but Patri Hacha, but maybe they would exempt here. When a non-Jew makes it into dough, Hassam over there, who that's where it says.
Owned by a Jew.
No, owned by a non-Jew.
No. So why is he obligated for Maaseh?
He later converts.
Oh, convert.
Yeah. So, and but with the non-Jew with Maaseh, the reason why he would be obligated is they would be according to the opinion that since it grew in the land of Israel, the non-Jew can't take away the obligation that comes from the land, even if he wouldn't convert. So here we're talking about conversion in regards to the challah.
It has to be done simultaneously here, Rabbi, right? The conversion and the maaser thing there together, you know, right?
Why? Non-Jews could give maaser.
I mean, the conversion takes usually 6 months or a year to do conversion.
Okay.
It cannot be done overnight, but prior...
It goes from non-Jew to Jew instantly.
Right. At whatever point, it can happen quickly. So again... So maybe a few Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda to come a chayvi hasam, even Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda obligate when chumas and maestros, when there was a miruach of a non-Jew. Nevertheless, patri hacha. Nevertheless, they would exempt here in regards to Gilgul Isa, the mixing together of dough. Because hasam who dechsev, there is a special verse. It says de gancha yesera. It says multiple times de gancha, like it says in Devarim 12:17. And then it says in Devarim 14:23. It says in 18:4. So it keeps saying degancha, degancha, degancha. So degancha means your grain. So it keeps saying your grain is what has shumas and maestros. So therefore, the way Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda interpret it is, havi miyud achar miyud. If it says degancha, I mean your grain, but not the grain of a non-Jew. Because that's digun of the kochav, not degancha, not your grain. But it keeps repeating that. It says your grain, your grain, your grain. So whenever you have a repetition again and again to exclude, ultimately that makes it included. So since it's your grain, but then again, your grain, so now it must mean even not your grain. Because if it really only meant only your grain, it would have said it once. Saying it multiple times is to exclude. Saying to exclude multiple times is ultimately to include. So therefore, since it says, the gancha yasera, havi miyud achar miyud, it excludes after it excludes, and a miyud achar miyud el rabos, and that's why they say, afilo of the kochavim, even if it's the grain of a non-Jew, it's still obligated, it's included. Avol hacha, but in regards to challah, it doesn't say degancha multiple times. It says your dough, it says your dough twice. And they're both needed. One time when it says ariso seichem, it's to teach you that you have to have the right amount of dough. So the how much dough is obligated in challah? The same amount of dough that you used to eat in the desert. You used to get in the desert an omer of man. So if you made an omer worth of flour into dough, you have to separate challah. Now the other one, the other time it says your dough, is the same. Below isaso of the kochavin, your dough, but not the dough of non-Jews, not the dough made by non-Jews. The lo isas hektesh, and not the dough made by hektesh. So therefore, maybe everybody agrees in regards to challah that if the gilgal, if the mixing of the flour into dough is by non-Jews who own it, not ariso seichem, not your dough, then it is exempt from challah. Odzilmor, maybe this is Rava still speaking, or possibly. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon Katanila. This brisa that I quoted that said that the dough made by the non-Jew is not obligated in the challah. That's only Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Shimon, the kapatri, who exempt grain that is smoothed out by the non-Jew from chumas and maisos. But Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, who say that based on a miyud achar miyud, the two exclusions ultimately includes, they say that the multiple exclusions of de gancha is ultimately to say that when regards to chumas and maestros, the grain of non-Jews is obligated in chumas and maestros. So since they're including the grain of non-Jews in chumas and maestros, the smoothing out, according to them, of the pile of grain by the non-Jew does not exempt it. So if it doesn't exempt, since we have a gzeira shava, racious, it says racious ariso seichem, the first of your dough, and it says racious degancha, the first of your grain. So since there's a connection between truma and challah, we have to learn and say that just like in truma, the miruach of the non-Jew does not create an exemption, in challah, the gilgal of the non-Jew also doesn't create an exemption, and maybe they would hold that in challah there is an obligation.
Rabbi, if the field is owned by a non-Jew, okay, and they're growing grain, and he cuts the grain,
right,
and a Jew comes and buys the whole pile, okay, one shot, is he obligated to do maaser right now, the Jew here, or he's not?
That's the argument. That's the argument of the Tanaim.
So, I mean, do we know the answer yet?
How do we paskin? I believe that we rule that there is an obligation.
There's an obligation for him. So when he buys the pile, he has to put 10% on this side.
Yeah,
you know, because even though he didn't grow it, he didn't cut it,
inherits
nothing, right?
I think so. That's
so
right.
That would be like 10% of the income situation here. That'd be here. Is that right?
Let's just check to be sure.
You know,
your cost.
Let's just see here what it says.
By the way, today,
Rav Meir Shapiro. That's amazing. Wow. Mm. Wow. Special.
That's right.
If the non-Jew makes dough, it is exempt.
What did you say? Before
making dough, it's just a pile of the grain.
So no. So we say that the grain of the non-Jew is exempt.
But if a Jew buys them as a pile, it becomes, you know, obligated.
Depends when he bought it. If he bought it before the pile was smoothed, and the Jew smoothed out the pile, it would be obligated. If he bought it after the pile was smoothed, it would not be obligated.
It would not be obligated.
Smooth.
Yeah, the miruach, it's like the finishing, right.
When you shave, you're obligated.
So again, Amar Rava, after Rava has this question, he says, Yehi Rava de'erzi b'chilma, may it be Hashem's will that I should see it in a dream. In other words, I hope that Hashem reveals to me the answer to this question, whether the non-Jew who makes dough, is that dough exempt according to everybody or not? So then Rava did resolve the question. Hadamar Rava, then Rava said, Man zamer miruach ov dekochavim poter, the one who says that the non-Jew who smooths out a pile exempts his pile from Shumas and Maestros, namely Rav Yosi and Rav Shimon, he would hold Gilgal ov dekochavim poter. He would hold that if a non-Jew made dough, it's exempt from challah. Man zamer miruach ov dekochavim eino poter, the opinion that says that if the non-Jew smooths out the pile, it's still obligated in Shumas and Maestros. He would hold Gilgal Ovid Kochavim Eino Poter. He would hold that if the non-Jew makes the dough, it also is not exempt. Okay, so that's what Rava said, that there is a total parallel between Miruach and Gilgal. Eisvei Rav Papa LeRava. So Rav Papa now challenges Rava from a brisa about Truma. We learned Ovid Kochavim Shehifrish, a non-Jew who is a rancher, and he sets aside a sheep to redeem Peter Chamor, to redeem the firstborn donkey that was born in his ranch. Or a non-Jew who separates challah, who separates a piece of dough as challah, Modin also shu pater. We would tell him and say, listen, you're exempt from this. You're a non-Jew. You don't have to separate. You don't have to redeem the firstborn donkey with a sheep. You don't have to give challah. And therefore, chalasso is not challah. And therefore, ne'achalas lazar, it can be eaten by non-Kohanim. Upeter chamor, and his firstborn donkey is not holy. The sheep for the firstborn donkey is not holy. The gozes, they can cut the wool of that sheep. Oved bo, and you can work it like any animal that's not holy. So what do you see? Challah, not. Peter chamor, not. Hachumaso, implying, but the non-Jew separates truma. That is truma. That is asura. That becomes the property of Kohanim, and it's prohibited to non-Kohanim. So apparently the non-Jew smearing does not exempt from truma, even though the non-Jew's gilgul is exempting from challah. So that's against Rava, because Rava's conclusion is that whatever is true about miruach is true about gilgul, and here you're seeing a split. For haitana d'amar miruach over to kochavim eno poter. If this tana holds that the non-Jew's truma is truma, that means that when the non-Jew smoothed out the pile, it didn't exempt it from truma. And nevertheless, this tana is the one saying that gilgul over kochavim poter. That making the flour into dough exempts the dough. Vod, and furthermore, Esfer Ravina l'Rava. We know that Ravina challenged Rava from another Braisa. A Braisa again about challah. It says, Chalas Ovid Kochavim, the challah of non-Jews from grain, ba'aretz, that grew in the land of Israel, uchumaso, and the chuma that a non-Jew separates from grain, b'chutz la'aretz, outside of Israel, modinos ha'shu potter, we tell this non-Jew, listen, you don't need to give challah, you don't need to give chuma, and therefore, this challah that you separated, necheles lazarim, can be eaten by non-Kohanim. This truma that you separated, Eina Midamas, doesn't have the status of truma. If it would fall into a mixture, it wouldn't make the whole mixture problematic. Okay, implying, where is it that his grain is not going to be truma? B'chutz l'aretz. Ha'chumaso ba'aretz, but his grain in the land of Israel, where there's a biblical obligation, asura, that does become truma. U'midamas, and if it falls into a mixture, it makes it a mixture of truma and chulin. So what's going on again? Here's again a Tana saying that in regards to Chuma, the fact that the non-Jew smoothed out the pile did not exempt. And nevertheless, in regards to Challah, Gilgul Ovid Kochavim Poter, the fact that the non-Jew made it into a dough means it is exempt from Challah. So it seems to be against Rava. Answers the Gemara, no, really, according to Rava, and what even these brisos, the same way when the non-Jew smooths out a pile, it's exempt from truma. If the non-Jew made the flour into dough, the dough is exempt from challah. The challah that's taken from it is not challah. Why did it say here that it is obligated in challah? It's a new challah, it's a challah midrabanan. Midrabanan, this is an obligation rabbinically. I'm sorry, not that the challah is challah midrabanan. The truma is truma midrabanan. Truma also he would be exempt. Since he made the pile of grain, he smoothed out the pile, he's really exempt from truma. Why did it say that there's a truma here? It's not a real truma. It's a rabbinic obligation of truma. Gzeira mishum bale kisin. A decree because of rich Jews who are going to try to have tax planning. What are they going to do? These Jews have lots of fields, and they don't want to give away a lot to the Kohen as Truma. So what are they going to do? Right when the field is getting harvested, they bring in their local non-Jew, and they say, okay, I want to sell you the field. So now the non-Jew will own it when it gets smoothed out. And then they'll say, okay, now sell it back. So they'll have this type of a fraudulent conveyance to prevent an obligation of truma. So that's what the rabbi said, you know what, if non-Jews make the pile, you have to pay truma too. That's way, no way out of that. But really, non-Jews should be exempt.
Rabbi, are we saying here that we can eat a challah made by non-Jew? It sounds like...
Challah here, well, the word challah doesn't mean a loaf of bread. The word challah means the piece of dough taken out of the dough and given to a kohen. Nowadays, since our kohanim are all impure, we can't give it to a kohen to eat because chuma and challah has to be eaten in a state of purity, so we burn that piece of dough. And because that dough is taken off and burned, the loaf is called challah. But when we talk about challah, we're talking about the dough that's taken off.
Okay, so but in a cooked state, we have to eat the challah we know today has to be made by a Jew, right?
That's for other reasons, because we don't want to eat, you know exactly Pas Yisrael. We don't want to eat that which is baked by a non-Jewish neighbor. But if it would be baked in a bakery, Pas Palterin, that is okay. We saw a little bit of that in Avodah Zarah. We'll see it also when we get to Chul in the next Masechta, God willing.
So, Rabbi, the people that they sell their store, the business, on Friday for $1 to the manager,
right,
and buy it back Moshe Shabbos, it's illegal, right?
I don't know that it's illegal. I mean, I'm more of a liberal on these questions. I think that if Hashem created loopholes, He created them so that they would be able to be used.
Do they really could do that, Rabbi?
I think so.
Is kosher la Pesach?
I think so. It's what's called. I think it is allowed, but it's
ShopRite.
All these things. Stores. Chametz, yes. Yeah, but I think that we have to sometimes do things to help people out.
I mean, there are rabbis that are totally against this, right, Rabbi?
No. There were rabbis who are against it. That's right, and then there are others who are more lenient about it. Yeah. So the Gemara says, one second, Ihachi, if there is such a rabbinic law, now turning to Samach Zayin Amid Beis. Afilu challah nami. So why did they say that the challah of the non-Jew is not challah? They should make a decree and say that the challah of the non-Jew is also challah, because people are going to sell their challah, they're going to sell their dough before it becomes finished, before it becomes a dough, to the non-Jew, and let the non-Jew do the gilgal. The Gemara says, no, if we wanted to worry about people trying to avoid challah, we're not going to really accomplish anything by saying that the non-Jew's challah is also challah. Because people can always avoid challah. They can take the flour and put it into two bowls. And instead of making a dough of 5 pounds of flour, they can make a dough of 4.5 pounds of flour. And then they are exempt from challah. So people want to avoid it, they can avoid it. So therefore, we're not going to create a rule. So 1 second, Shuma Nami. If people want to avoid Shuma, also they can avoid Shuma. After Davila Kidrib Oshia, first of all, they have the subterfuge of Rib Oshia. Damar Rib Oshia, Marim Adam Al Tfu Aso, Umachnisa Bemotchala, Kidesha Behemo Chalas, Upturman Amiser. A person can take grain, and instead of separating the chaff and the stubble from the grain, he brings the grain into the barn with the chaff and stubble. So now it's animal food. Animal food's exempt from maestros. So a person can bring it in as animal food and it'll be exempt from maestros. Or there's another way, nam or else, zaile derech gagos to derech karfifos. If he brings the grain into the barn through the roof and through the backyard, the only time that grain is obligated in maestros at Sheyirah Pnei Abayis, it has to come in through the front door. But if it came in through the back or it came in through the roof, it's exempt from Shumas and maestros. So people have their ways to avoid Shumas and maestros. So if they have their ways, why are we worried about the Baalei Kisan, about the rich people selling their field to the non-Jews and having the non-Jews do the Miruach to avoid Shumas and maestros? Therefore we say, even if the non-Jew will do the Miruach, there will be an obligation of Shumas and maestros rabbinically. There are other ways that people could avoid Shumas and Maestros. The Gemara said, no, there's a difference. Hasan b'farhesi. If somebody's trying to avoid Shumas and Maestros by bringing in the grain with the stubble, it's public. Everybody sees it. So zila b'milsa, that's pretty insulting. People don't want to do that because that everybody sees it. He's a stingy fellow trying to avoid Shumas and Maestros. But to sell it to the non-Jew, nobody else sees. Hachabitzina. So therefore, if it's a private, he doesn't feel bad about it. He's happy to do it. So therefore, this is a subterfuge that people are happy to do. Oh, so now we need to create a law to avoid it and say, sorry, you need to give the chumas and maisos, because even when a non-Jew does miruach midrabbanan, it's obligated in shumos, and maestros. Okay, now we go to the next Mishnah, going back to how the Minchas HaOmer was prepared. So, Balol Isaron. Now the Kohen goes to this Isaron, this 5 pounds of Soles, the Asiris Ha'efa. Nasan Alav Shamno, he puts on this barley flour, its oil, Ulevonaso, and its spices. In other words, he puts the oil into a measuring cup, he puts the spices into the measuring cup, and now he has to make the dough. Yatzak. So now he pours the oil, Uvalal, and he mixes the oil and the barley flour into a dough. Then Hainif, then the Kohen waves it, as we saw, out and in, up and down. And then Kamatz, and the Kohen takes a fistful out of the dough, puts it into a holy vessel, collects all the Lavona, puts all of the spices into this holy vessel, this frankincense, and then walks up to the Mizbeach top, the Hiktir, and he throws it into the fire. Bashar, and the rest of the bowl, Nechal Kohanim, the Kohanim get to eat it like any other Shiare Mincha. Now, Mishakara Omer, the moment that the Omer was brought, Yotzin, they would go out to the streets, Umotzin Shuk Yerushalayim, Shumale Kemach, they would find that the market of Yerushalayim was filled with flour.
Chadash.
And yes, the new grain was now being sold. And kali, they would find caramelized, you know, caramel flour, popped corn, popped wheat kernels. So this is Shalom Baratzon Chacham de Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says he's not happy about it. It's not, the rabbi's not happy. You can't eat it until the Omer is brought. So to start preparing all this food, which isn't kosher yet, is dangerous. Because if you prepare food, people like to snack on it.
Yeah.
So then they might be eating chadash before they're allowed to. However, you don't, it's not a problem. It's not a problem. You can prepare food even though you can't eat it. So you'll eat it when you're allowed to eat it. But to prepare it, people are not going to necessarily snack. Baratzul Chacham Ayosim, the sages, were 100% approving of this. So now we're going to have this argument. Please.
So there will be kotsrim. Ha'am ayu kotsrim lifnei.
Yeah. Or maybe that day already.
It's against.
Maybe later that night after they cut the chadash. That night in the morning.
So Rabbi, the Kohanim, after they eat whatever left over, they could take it to their wives and the family,
no, they
right?
Couldn't leave the Azara.
They cannot leave the Azara?
No, they had to eat it in the Azara. It was kachin kachin. It was like the meat of a chatas. The family can't eat it.
So then, how about his family? What the heck they eat?
Truma.
Truma.
They eat a truma.
Truma, they get a lot of truma. So ask the Gemara, is it true that Rabbi Yehuda is not worried about people snacking? Is it true that Rabbi Yehuda is not worried that people might eat? What about the fact that in regards to Bedikas Chametz, Rabbi Yehuda says don't do Bedikas Chametz on Pesach, because if you do Bedikas Chametz on Pesach, you might eat the Chametz. Or meaning, I'll challenge you, we learned Rabbi Yehuda says both can you check for Chametz or Arba Asar, the night of the 14th. Arba Asar Shachas, you can check for Chametz on the morning of the 14th. And Bishah Sabir in the afternoon of the 14th. But not later. Why not later? Because you might eat it. Chacham say, no, lo badak, if you didn't check. So then you check on Chalamoy. They're not worried you might eat it. So my Rabba said, Shiny Chadash. Rabbi Yehuda makes a distinction between Chadash and Chametz. Mitosh lo itartalo. El yalide kituf. Since you don't allow them to cut the grain in the normal way, as Izzy brought up. If they can just pick it by hand. So Zachar, who he remembers not to eat it, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda says it's okay, whatever they pick by hand, they could prepare before, and the moment the Omer is brought, they can start selling, and now it'll all be okay. So may these words of Torah be a schus to the Nishmas, Rav Meir Shapiro, a blessed memory.